We have a lot we could discuss in a very short period of time, so I will summarize everything. We're in a mess. It's a mess. And we're not effectively getting out of the mess right now. Some basic points, which I'll just put on the headlines, and then we can discuss them. First, we're at the end of the U.S. leadership period. A lot of the uncertainties that we feel right now are because the United States does not and cannot lead. But Europe does not fill the void. And Latin America in recent years has been completely deinstitutionalized. Also, no help of the United States as usual, which can't even hold a meeting without a fight in which eight countries end up not showing up to Los Angeles last week. So Latin America is not in an organized state of affairs. Europe is clearly not. The U.S. has a mindset, U.S. government, that is, our state, has a mindset that it is still the world leader, which is rather preposterous given global realities, but it leads to tremendous mistakes, a failure of diplomacy, a failure to negotiate, a very harsh line against China, which is completely contrary to the actual needs of the planet because we need cooperation everywhere, an us versus them mentality. So everybody is divided. Are you on our side or are you on the other side? We cannot function this way because every challenge we face is not about us versus them. COVID was not us versus them. It wasn't about vaccine nationalism. It wasn't about accusations. It was about getting a pandemic under control. I'll add one provocative statement. We could take it up later. It may shock you or not shock you, or you may say, I already know that, Professor Sachs. But I chaired a commission for The Lancet for 2 years on COVID. I'm pretty convinced it came out of U.S. lab biotechnology, not out of nature, just to mention after 2 years of intensive work on this. So it's a blunder, in my view, of biotech, not an accident of a natural spillover. We don't know for sure, I should be absolutely clear. But there's enough evidence that it should be looked into, and it's not being investigated, not in the United States, not anywhere. And I think for real reasons, that they don't want to look underneath the rug too much. Well, that got us into a tremendous mess. Now we have a war that could have been avoided. It would have been avoided if the United States had not been so insistent on pushing NATO eastward and eastward and eastward. In this discussion that we sometimes have, because we don't have much of a public debate, it is claimed that the West never promised that NATO would not go eastward. Let me summarize by saying the West did promise very explicitly that NATO would not go eastward. Bill Clinton, who was not a very consequent leader for many reasons, pressure from Central European countries as well as the domestic vote, said, okay, we expand NATO eastward in the first wave. George W. Bush, who was a walking disaster from beginning to end of foreign policy, enlarged NATO 7 countries. Romania, Bulgaria, Slovakia, Slovenia, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, right up to the Russian border. And then in 2008 had the great brainstorm, well, why don't we enlarge NATO all the way to Georgia? Take a look at the map. What is that about? This was supposed to be a defensive alliance against a country that no longer exists. Now it's on the other side of the Black Sea. My feeling is they were reliving the Crimean War age, that we have to bottle up Russia in the Black Sea. Well, that was Russia's attitude. I don't blame them, whether that's right or wrong. That was their attitude. We should have negotiated. Refusal, 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 refusal to negotiate. Then came 2021. Biden came into office. Putin said, we need to negotiate this. The United States said, it's off the table. We don't negotiate this issue. I know it. I mean, I know inside what happened also. But they said no negotiation on NATO at all. 3 times in 2021, in the NATO summit, which you're about to host here in Madrid, and then in 2 declarations, one with the Defense Department and one with the State Department, the United States said, not only is NATO enlargement to Ukraine already cooked in, but we are increasing the military capacity. We're sending billions of dollars of arms. Okay, you don't think that's provocative? It's provocative. So we don't discuss those things, because when I say those things in the United States, A, I can't get even published in an op-ed piece, which is usually something that is not quite an issue for me, having written thousands, and because no one wants to discuss these issues. No debate. Please, next week, when you host NATO here, don't just say, oh, yes, United States, you're so wise. Or, oh, yes, we pour more weapons into Ukraine so that more can be destroyed. Please don't do that. Because European leaders have known for 14 years how dangerous that is. But they don't say it. I'd say all the European leaders, except for the UK, which knows nothing, unfortunately, because all they know is follow the U.S. But the rest, no. This is not right. This is dangerous. We need to negotiate. We need a different approach. Russia needs to leave, but we don't need to enter afterwards. So if we actually discussed, there's an agreement to be reached. But the point, by the way, is not to push Zelensky to discuss with Putin. That's meaningless. It's the U.S. to discuss with Putin. That's the only negotiation that counts. What can Zelensky offer? The idea that we sit back and let Zelensky negotiate is an absurdity. It's a dodge of responsibility. The one responsible is the U.S. president. He should discuss. Also in a multilateral setting, because this really should be handled by the U.N. Security Council, which is not impossible. The veto issue doesn't apply here because there's no meaning to anything unless Russia also agrees. So we need an agreement where we negotiate within the UN Security Council framework. China can be a constructive part of this agreement. And that raises another issue. The United States is on a war path with China. Why? I'll tell you why. Neurosis. Because the United States has a neurotic fear of China. And the reason is that China's a big country, and the United States is supposed to run the world. And if you're supposed to run the world in your own mind, and you have this very large country, that creates a neurosis. And that's what we have. So everything is put in the worst possible terms. And everything is done in a hostile way. And how safe is it for Taiwan to have the United States every day saying, we will defend Taiwan, we will defend Taiwan? That's about the most dangerous thing you can say for Taiwan. All it does is raise the fear, raise the temperature factor. It's not calming anything. It's not defending anybody. It's just creating more anxiety. But that's the U.S. mindset. It comes back to my first point. We're in a post-American unipolar world, if there ever was such a thing, even for a moment. But we are in a multipolar world. But that means to take responsibility each region. That's the key. The interesting thing about the Sustainable Development Goals is that they cannot be achieved country by country anywhere. At a minimum, you need regional cooperation. Thanks God for the European Union, because that makes it possible for Europe to achieve a European Green Deal. Try that 27 times separately. Completely impossible. But as a union, it's possible. So the name of the game in this world is regional cooperation, and then the regions cooperating with each other. It's a little bit different from a country-by-country architecture. We need a strong European Union. We need a strong African Union. We need a strong Latin America. What exactly? But we do need a strong Latin America, unified, not divided. Okay, we're on this side on Venezuela. We're on this side on Cuba. That's a U.S. game. That's not a Latin American game. That's a U.S. game. Latin America should be unified. The issues are the same everywhere, by the way. How to make the energy transformation, how to upgrade education, how to build core infrastructure, how to bring in marginal groups. It's the same issues. How to raise technology standards, how to improve research and development capacity. This is a common Latin American and, I'd say, and Caribbean program. Not, well, we'll do it, but can't have Bolivia, can't have Nicaragua, can't have Cuba, can't have Venezuela. That's the other side, not our side. This is impossible. It makes no sense. It's a U.S. mentality. And by the way, I am sure you know it. It's all about capturing the electoral votes in Florida. It has nothing to do with anything. You think Trump knew who Maduro was or could care less? Not at all. But he was told by Marco Rubio that that's essential for the 2020 vote in Florida. So all of Latin America gets turned on its head because of a local state election in the United States. Honestly, I'm not exaggerating. This is how weird it is. Otherwise, Trump could not put Venezuela on a map and could care less except maybe to build a golf course there. So this is weird, but the region needs to get together. Stop the divisions. Unify. Talk about infrastructure. Talk about a zero carbon energy system. Chile is doing wonderful things expanding in the Atacama with massive solar energy. And then you have Paraguay and Brazil with Itaipu, and you have incredible wind power in Patagonia. And you start putting the pieces together, you've got a superpower of renewable energy. But it has to be interconnected. It has to be regional cooperation. And every other region of the world should figure this out too. The United States is working overtime to say, China here, Japan and Korea here. If those three would ever figure it out, from an economic point of view, by the way, those three countries are the world's superpower of technology right now. And if they ever work together, oh my God, what it would mean. By the way, I think it would be good for the world. You'd have a superpower of technological innovation coming, which is good for the world, not bad for the world. But the U.S. is very keen. You're on our side. You're on the Quad. We need a new alliance. China's dangerous, and so forth. So it's trying in a very weird way to create these divisions and these conflicts everywhere. Final point, just in opening remarks for us, is that sustainable development is not a nice thing to do. There's no alternative. There's chaos or there's sustainable development. It's not an ideological option. It's we fall into not just 40 degree Celsius days in Madrid, but God knows what is going to happen as we hit tipping points on the climate, which we're going to hit year after year now. And it's much more dangerous than just the temperature going up another degree. I had the unhappy anxiety of heading a scientific institute on these issues for 15 years at Columbia. And I learned that climate scientists are the most soft-spoken, terrifying people in the world. Because if you sit down with someone who really knows, not with me, but say with my colleague James Hansen, you walk out shaking. Because in the quiet way, they'll explain to you how the Earth's systems are absolutely going to be in a state of unprecedented change in the history of civilization, undermining all basic assumptions of the last 10,000 years, like where to put cities near coasts. Huh, great. Now we have multi-meter sea level rise getting cooked in by the disintegration of the West Antarctic ice sheet. Or what happens when another of my, when my brilliant late Columbia University climatologist, Wally Broker, is shown to be right. He discovered the ocean circulation picture that you've seen, how the water descends in the deep ocean in the North Atlantic and then circles the world. That's called the thermohaline circulation, and it's a discovery of the last 60 years, and it was by this brilliant man. And he said the global warming and the implications of that could stop this circulation, or and even merely slow it down or stop it. It is slowing now, we know. That means that the Gulf Stream and all the rest that is part of the circulation is changing fundamentally. And the dangers of that are multiple. And there are many tipping points around the world like this. We don't have a choice. And there's no real scientific debate. There's uncertainties, for sure. But the basics are actually quite well known. And yet, if we're going to be having war in Ukraine and refighting the Crimean War that is 170 years ago, having our conflict with China, which goes back to the Opium Wars of 1839, and it's like America wants to relive all of the greatest dates of the British Empire. If we go through that, there is no way we're going to solve any of these problems, period. So unless we sit down, discuss, bring the scientists in, bring the engineers in, bring the public in, calm down, meet with each other, understand that we're in a common fate, unless we do all of those things, as I said at the start, it's a mess. Thank you very much.